Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on here on a Monday. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. A little under the weather. Hopefully he'll be feeling better and back in the saddle coming up tomorrow. We'll see how that goes for him, but again, we wish him nothing but the best, feeling better. We appreciate you hanging out with us here on a busy Monday. And the last few days, the place to be for all the biggest collegiate names from the last year of college football was in Indianapolis, because the NFL Combine was going on. It's always a fascinating event. There's a lot of things that people watch on TV that they can see, like the 40-yard dash, but that's not really the only thing that matters. There's a lot of different stuff that goes into who has a good combine, who doesn't have a great combine. But we said, let's check in. Let's see how some of these big stars did in the last few days and what that might do for their future. And joining us, somebody who was there for the whole deal in Indianapolis, Ian Cummings. He is draft analyst for the Pro Football Network. He joins us here on the Chuck Oliver Show on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Ian, how are you doing, man?
Doing good. It was a busy week, for sure. You know, it's a hectic time, the NFL Combine, but a lot of information to glean. And like you said, the on-field testing portion, the positional drills, yes, that's what draws a lot of the eyes. That's what people gravitate toward. But medicals, interviews, just as important for teams who are trying to decide who they want to take with their draft capital. So a big week of information gathering, and now we can sift through the aftermath and see what's going on.
So we're a college football-focused show, so I'm going to stick to mostly just prospects I think our audience is into. Not to say we won't, you know, care about anything else, but it's fascinating because you have certain programs that it seems like when guys go there, they basically are true to their height and their weights, roughly. And then there's other programs where it's like, oh, this dude's like 2.5 inches shorter than they said he was. A classic example would be, it seems like maybe Texas at least does some height inflation, but at the same time, wow, some Texas kids had really nice days at the combine.
Yeah, for sure. Going to Texas, Xavier Worthy was listed at 6'1 forever, you know, from the first day he stepped on campus, and then he ended up measuring at around 5'11. A.D. Mitchell, 6'4, ended up being 6'2 3/8, I think. But hey, I mean, you're not going to knock that as much when they run as fast as they did. A.D. Mitchell with a 4.35 40, Xavier Worthy breaking the record with a 4.21. I mean, anytime you watched him, on whether it's on tape or live watching college football on Saturdays, you knew that speed was different. I mean, defensive backs were giving him at least 10 yards of cushion on every single play. So you know it's a lot to deal with. There is a bit of a counteractive effect where, yes, they measure in smaller, but at the same time, you're willing to put up with it because the speed, the talent, the route running ability, the dynamic potential is so great.
Yeah, and it just was interesting to me because, again, you've got guys like that that's like, okay, we've been boosting them a little bit, and then it seems like the FSU kids, for example, basically were true to what they were supposed to be. These dudes are enormous, and they are, in fact, enormous.
Yeah, they're enormous. Johnny Wilson, I think, had the longest wingspan ever for any wide receiver. There's going to be questions at the NFL level whether he'll play wide receiver or be more of a move tight end, but you're absolutely right. Some teams are true to it. Some teams are very exact as well. I know Notre Dame had their heights to the nearest eighth of an inch as well. Now, they were missing the mark a little bit too, because Joe Wall ended up measuring in almost a full inch taller than he did at the collegiate level. So it's very interesting to see the variance, you know, both forward and back. I know one glaring example a couple cycles ago was Wandale Robinson from Kentucky. They lifted him at 5'11", and he ended up measuring in around 5'7". So that was a big markup. But the NFL Combine is great to get the exact numbers for these guys and that their physical profiles.
I know you were really impressed in general with the wide receivers. I mean, this was supposed to be a really deep receiver crop. Now that you've gotten a chance to see them all in that NFL setting, and they've got a chance to poke and prod, do the medicals and everything, How strong a crop are we talking? Are we talking like historically great? Are we talking better than the last couple of years? How good is this crop?
On the surface, there is potential for this to be a historic class. Now, obviously, we don't know how each player is going to pan out at the NFL level, and the situation, the landing spot, plays just as big a role in their outcomes, right? So projective, it's a little tough to say, but right now on the surface, what we know, it's a very, very strong class, and one of the strongest that I've ever seen personally. I think the top-end talent, right, Marvin Harrison Jr., didn't even test, but we know, watching the tape, the guy is legit, he's different. Roma Dunze is very talented, as his testing showed. Malik Nabers didn't test, but he's an explosive power keg on film. And then you've got Brian Thomas Jr., who ran a 4.33 at 6'4", over 205 pounds. You got A.D. Mitchell, again, Xavier Worthy, again. Even guys who didn't test quite as well, but still tested well, like Jalen Polk from Washington. You know, that national championship run, I think a lot of the clutch catches that he made really stood out and kind of exuded the way that he can win at the NFL level. The strong hands, the route running ability, the flexibility. He's got that high floor profile. And then even guys that are farther down the board, not in the round one range, Ricky Pearsall. You know, remember that crazy one-hand catch he made, you know, extending beyond his frame with a defender getting right inside his torso in midair. That's the kind of hand strength and reliability that he provides, that he ran a 4.41 40-yard dash and had a 42-inch vertical. So guys like him, Ladd McConkey, Roman Wilson, you can go on and on and on with this wide receiver class. I think there are a lot of really strong tiers at the top, but then a lot of different varying player profiles too. If you need a separator, if you need a contested catch guy, if you need an alpha, a rack threat, everything that you need is under that category in this class. And that's what's so fun, because there's so many different player, team, potential outcomes.
Ian Cummings is with us from Pro Football Network. He's one of their draft analysts. We appreciate him giving us a look at what went down the combine. One kid you haven't mentioned yet, I was curious about, Xavier Leggett, is a guy who had an incredible final season in Columbia. And I know there were some people who didn't love what they saw from him, especially the first day at the Senior Bowl. It sure looked like he helped himself with what he did in Indianapolis, too.
Yeah, for sure. I think the big thing, the big selling point with him, I mean, you watch him open up his strides when he has a runway. The dude has legit speed. I mean, and this is a guy who's 6'1". He measured in at 221 pounds, right? So that is a rocked up player. And I think that translates after the catch with play strength and contact balance. But even more, you know, the explosiveness to press upfield into stems and kind of cause DBs to drift off their spot, create separation for yourself. From a diagnostic standpoint, the route running consistency, the hand technique from him, there's a little bit more room for him to keep getting more consistent with that and that routine execution. But the size speed profile is incredible. I think back to last year, another guy who made some very nice plays at the collegiate level, Jonathan Mingo from Ole Miss, was around 6 foot, over 220, ran in the 4.3s, had an over 40-inch vertical. Xavier Leggett ran a 4.39 at 221. I think that size-speed profile is really what's going to entice NFL evaluators. Yes, in Senior Bowl, that first day wasn't great, but one thing that I really like from him is that throughout that week at Mobile, he built and built and built. And by the final day, he was separating as a route runner. You know, he was stacking a little improvements, and you love to see that from the guys talented as he is. So the combine really did a nice job of quantifying that. And at the next level, ultimately, it's going to be what role does he translate best into? Is he an X receiver, a movement Z who can be seen touches? I think there's a little bit of both with him, and I think that's going to entice NFL teams.
When you have a situation where there seems to be so much talent, does that in some ways almost hurt guys? I mean, you mentioned Harrison. Harrison from the beginning has been treated like his own separate planet, that he's just so preposterously good that he could still go top five, maybe without ever even working out if he didn't want to. But beyond him, because there is that feeling, hey, you might be able to get a Leggett, say, in the second round, or a Pearsall in the third round, or you know, some of these other names, are we going to see some guys that are really quality players fall down the board just because there is this perception, hey, you don't have to take that guy in round one. The gap is just not that big between that and rounds two and three this year?
I think that's absolutely a possibility. I think there are different floors for certain prospects. Like, there's a select floor that I don't see Marvin Harrison Jr. falling out of. You know, Roma Dunze and Malik Nabers the same way. If they were to fall out of the top 12 or 13 or 14, at the most, right, I'd be very surprised. I think Marvin Harrison Jr., very likely, for me, the Chargers at number five are probably his floor. I think the more interesting conversation is, if you're a team like Arizona or Los Angeles at four or five, or even the Patriots at three, if they decide they want to get a quarterback elsewhere, right? You know, you're looking at, hey, we could get Marvin Harrison Jr. here, or we could trade back, get a lot more capital, and still get a guy like Brian Thomas Jr. or A.D. Mitchell, right? You know, there's a lot of depth in this class, and I think that what that's going to change is the maneuverability of each team, trying to get the best value proposition. Marvin Harrison Jr. is my wide receiver one. He's a near-generational prospect, right? You know, not to just diminish anything that he's done and anything he is as a prospect, but there's just so much talent. So if you're a team, for example, I just did a mock today post-combine where Arizona traded down for number four, managed to get Terrion Arnold in the 10 to 15 range, who's my CB1, and then managed to get A.D. Mitchell in that 20 to 25 range. Would you rather just get Marvin Harrison Jr. or get A.D. Mitchell and Terrion Arnold, right? You know, the value proposition equation is so complex with this class in particular because of the abundance of talent at those positions. And I think you're absolutely right. What we're going to see is that every single team has a different board with different rankings. There's so much variability. And I think that's going to create a lot of exciting outcomes down the road.
Ian Cummings with us, draft analyst for the Pro Football Network here on the Chuck Oliver Show. In offensive line, another area I know you really like what you saw. You mentioned Alt, and then there's some dudes. You see a kid like Amarius Mims, who's only started 8 games, but is just enormous and fast and just different than other human beings. It seems like it is a really strong year for line prospects, which is not always the case.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the first round line prospects in particular, it's a very compelling class. And that's one thing, the hit rate for first round offensive tackles is a little bit higher. You know, it's one of those positions, it's a premier position, so it's very valuable. But also, you know, you get that premier talent at that spot, it's a very scarce kind of thing, right? So the value gets driven up, supply and demand, and we see these guys go early in round one all the time. So I think this year's first round class is very, very strong, and that's going to elevate the value for a lot of teams. You got Joe Alt, you got Olu Fashanu, Amarius Mims, who's just kind of he's a specimen, man. 6'8", 340, should not look as lean as it does with him, you know, and then he's athletic in space, he's very powerful. The question with him is going to be the durability, right? Because there are a lot of games that he didn't finish, that he left early because of injury. He missed some time with that ankle injury. And then on his 40-yard dash at the combine, he tweaked his hamstring too. So, you know, durability, I think, is going to be the main question for him. But even at such a young age with so little experience, things like leverage acquisition, pad level, you know, composition and balance on his pass sets, very strong parts of his game. So I think there's a really good foundation to lay there too. Going beyond that, Troy Fautanu from Washington is a very, very good blocker. You know, in the CFB playoffs against Michigan and Texas, definitely showed that ability, right? The recovery athleticism, the power in the run game. And then you've got guys like J.C. Latham, who's an absolute mauler, very explosive on the vertical plane. Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, who's a former defensive tackle with really, really good flexibility, physicality. So the list goes on and on. And then Kingsley Suomataya, guys like that. There's just so much talent in that first round range. I think that's going to really compel teams because that's where you get that bookend tackle if you can.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Latham. I was about to ask about him because Chuck is a big J.C. Latham guy. He's really into him as a prospect. Quickly, and just want to ask you, the quarterbacks, the top three did not throw, which maybe opens the door for some of the guys behind him to get some attention. I know Bo Nix, maybe some people didn't love as much. Penix supposedly got good reviews. But a kid, maybe even like a Spencer Rattler. How did some of those guys take advantage of the opportunities that they had there?
I think the biggest thing for McCarthy, Penix, and Rattler was showing their easy spinning and velocity. I think all of those guys have really good arms. And I think for Bo Nix, that was a little bit of a detractor for him because I do think he has good arm talent, composite arm talent with his elasticity and angle freedom, but his velocity and drive just wasn't quite as good as the other guys. So you get to see that side-by-side comparison, and it does make it a little more distinct. I think Penix looked the most consistent with that drive velocity, and at Washington, that was one of his best traits. Is outside the numbers, down the field, some really tight, fleeting windows that are closing quickly, and he has the drive velocity to really push it in there on a rope. So that's a trait you love to see. And then, of course, Joe Milton showing that deep passing ability too. But I think for those guys, the more applicable arm strength, those tight window throws, J.J. McCarthy, Spencer Rattler, and Michael Penix Jr. all have the strength to make it happen. For McCarthy, accuracy was a little bit up and down, especially when he's throwing to his left. But being 21 years old, being so young and such a good head on his shoulders, he interviewed very well. For a lot of teams, it's as simple as he's young, he's talented. Do we want to invest in him? I think for McCarthy, he helped prove that answer is yes at the NFL Combine, and then Rattler and Penix showed that their arm talent is a tier above.
Last thing for you, Ian, is there one kid that maybe changed your mind the most about him? Could be good or bad, I guess, but changed your mind about him the most at the Combine?
Changed my mind the most about him. It's a tough question. It really is. I would say I was trying to think here. Ricky Pearsall, probably. He was a guy who on tape, I thought he was a good athlete on tape, but that's one I'm going to circle back and really reevaluate that, because 4.41 40-yard dash, 42-inch vertical, 10.9 broad, I believe. Those are very, very good athletic numbers. So I think back to Ricky Pearsall's evaluation. Mine was a good, not great athlete. I think he's got really good functional fluidity as a route runner. But if he can play up to those testing numbers, he's got the hand strength, he's got the route run ability, he's a very willing blocker, he's versatile, I could see him going top 50, right? So I think that's a guy who really helped himself. I'm going to go back and reevaluate the tape, but he's got some of the best hands in the class. He can separate. Those things are always translatable at the NFL level.
Ian Cummings, you check him out on Twitter if you're somebody who does that. IC_draft, the handle there. Make sure you follow him. Keep an eye on everything going on. Of course, see his work at profootballnetwork.com. Ian, appreciate you making some time for us here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Yes, sir, Heath. Thank you.
There you go. Appreciate Ian checking in again. The combine is just fascinating because you just have all these guys who have achieved so much, and then here they are all kind of in this one giant job interview setting, and the very best of them, if they want, can say, nah, I'll do it my way. I'll do it on campus on my terms. But the vast majority of them, even guys are going to be first-round picks. You gotta show up. You got to do this. And there's not many of us that have an equivalent to this for a job interview. You know, if you think about it, maybe you have to pass the bar, for example, at some point, but you don't have to pass the bar with the best possible score. You just have to pass the bar. You got to do enough. These guys, you not only have to pass the bar, you have to pass the bar by a lot. You got to be way better than everybody else if you want to make that money. One bad 40 time, one bad interview could change everything for you. It's just an unbelievably pressurized setting, and I'm always interested to see how guys handle it. A lot of positive reviews for a bunch of guys. Didn't see many dudes that you're hearing bad things about. You know, you think about a guy like Andre Smith at Bama, for example, got really criticized for his weight. Now, you didn't hear a lot of the stories this year. Seemed like everybody was ready for what they were doing at the combine. We continue here on the Chuck Oliver Show straight ahead.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on. Heath in for Chuck today. Thank you for hanging out with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Might have Chuck back tomorrow. Hopefully we will. We'll have to wait and see on that. But definitely glad to have you hanging out for now. So the EA Sports game, you remember there were some people that were telling the students that play college football, hey, yeah, you shouldn't get involved with this. No, sir. You should not do this. We are telling you, you could get more money. You should not do this deal. We would like to be your union, and we are telling you, don't take the deal. Don't take $600 is not enough. You can make more money. Yeah, guess how many of them are listening to that advice? Already announced in the 10 days since they opened the program for which you could opt in, which, again, if you want to be in the game, you opt in. They will give you $600, and they will give you a copy of the game. According to the folks at EA Sports, already more than 10,000 athletes have opted in to the video game because, go figure, they think it's pretty cool that they're going to get to be in the college football video game, and that even no matter what else happens the rest of their career, they'll always be able to be like, look, it's me in the video game, and be able to potentially play with themselves as a character in the video game. That's something that they think is cooler than whether or not some dude that wants to form a union thinks that they should be trying to get more revenue. Who could have guessed that it might turn out that way? And it's good to see that, frankly, because there is so much talk right now about everything involving money in this sport, whether it's going to be the idea down the line of a 14-team playoff with the revenue not being distributed evenly. Again, some of the thoughts about the proposal from the SEC and the Big Ten that we would like to have it set up where it's a 14-team playoff, but the two teams that get the bye every year will be the Big Ten champion and the SEC champion automatically, no matter what the circumstances. So at least in theory, you could have an undefeated ACC champ, an undefeated Big 12 champ, and SEC and Big Ten champions with losses could still get the byes while the undefeated champs have to play in the first round. That could be legit, but what most people think it's about is instead trying to force those smaller conferences or those conferences with less power to give up more revenue. Tomorrow, Dartmouth, not a school we talk about much on this program. Ivy League, not a big staple of the Chuck Oliver Show programming. But tomorrow, Dartmouth might have a ruling about whether or not members of its basketball team can unionize. The word is it will probably come down tomorrow. What the ruling will be, not entirely clear yet. But if it turns out that they are considered employees, it could be a union, that will continue to have ripple effects around the sport. Everything right now in the conversation is so easy to have it turn into money, money, money all the time. It's just nice to see that, at least in the case of the video game, you just got some kids that are like, hey, man, I'm going to enjoy this. This is going to be cool. I'm going to play it. I'm going to have fun. And I'm going to get a kick out of the fact I'm in it. And I'm not going to be listening to somebody, oh, you could maximize your revenue by holding out. Yeah, okay, sure. Because that never makes any sense, by the way. It makes sense to the kind of people who want to form unions and think strictly from bottom line standpoint. But they don't get it. There is no one college player. If there had been a college football video game this year, and Caleb Williams had said, I won't do it. So if you're going to play with the Trojans, you had to play with someone else, whether it be the backup quarterback, whether it just be a made-up good quarterback that they called Joe Miller, whatever. There's not a single soul that wouldn't have bought the video game that will buy the video game, but would have said, no, if I can't play with someone labeled as Caleb Williams, I'm not playing it. And that was the returning Heisman Trophy winner. So yes, I suppose it's true. If every single college player had said, we won't do it unless we get more money, maybe they could have gotten more money. Or maybe they would just say, well, we're just not doing the video game then. Or we'll do the video game, we'll just make up every single character. Because in the end, people want to play with their school that they're a fan of. They want to play with the Dogs or Notre Dame or whoever. And they're really not that obsessed in the end whether or not it's that true number one receiver for the Dogs that they're playing with. As long as the team's good, as long as it's, if you're playing with Georgia, you're playing with one of the best teams in the game, whether it's the real guy's name and number or Freddie Fernandez as your star tailback, they don't care. So kudos to the kids. I'm glad the game's coming. I'm glad that the kids are going to get the enjoyment out of it that we always expected that they would. I'm glad they're getting some revenue. They should. But in the end, this wasn't ever about that. And at a time when we got so much money, that's kind of a good thing.
Catch the King of College.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing here on a Monday. Again, the king away for the day. Hopefully back tomorrow, but we keep the college football conversation going. And we head down right now to South Florida because that is where Miami got started today. And so on the Duncan Newsmaker line, our Truist reporter on Miami today, Adam Lichtenstein joins us. He covers the Canes for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And Adam, appreciate you making the time, man. How are you?
I'm pretty good, and I'm feeling very glad right now that spring football started, and the media viewing section was all inside in the indoor facility and not outside in the sun.
Yeah, down there, I guess it's probably already summer in South Florida. You just skip straight past spring and go to summer. But it was officially spring practice this morning. I assume Cam Ward was kind of the featured attraction, so how'd he look?
Looked good. I mean, he had a couple nice throws. Looked pretty good in the one-on-one drills we got to watch. Threw a few dots and then got a lot of praise from the players and Mario Cristobal after practice. Ruben Bain mentioned at one point that, you know, he was standing on the other side of, like, the indoor facility, and he saw, like, Cam Ward throwing the ball around and stuff. And, you know, he kind of made a motion, like, hey, throw it to me. And Ward threw him, like, a 60-yard dot from across the facility. So, a lot of praise, a lot of excitement. Obviously, you know, Cam Ward's story number one. We didn't get a chance to talk to him today, but hopefully we will soon.
Tyler Van Dyke a couple of years ago was a guy people were throwing around as, oh, hey, this guy, he could be a first-round pick. Why did it go so wrong there? What caused him to just completely level off and become a guy that's now going to try his luck somewhere else?
For sure, and I was definitely one of those guys. I think I wrote, you know, after the first 4 weeks last year, like, oh, he's got some Heisman potential this year, and then things went south pretty quickly. It's a combination, just a couple things. One, he had three offensive coordinators in 3 years, and that's never easy on a quarterback. You know, offensive coordinators who, you know, are all running different schemes. Like, Josh Gattis was more of like a pro-style kind of offense, whereas Shannon Dawson's more air raid. Rhett Lashley likes to throw it around a lot. That's where he had the most success. So, not just three different coordinators, but three different types of offenses that he was asked to run. Injuries really derailed him at Miami. In 2022, he missed most of the back half of the year with a shoulder injury. And then last year, he was dealing with torn ligaments in his fingers on a throwing hand the whole season. He was dealing with a knee injury that I think messed him up for a while. And that threw him off a lot. And it just kind of, things kind of ran its course. You know, eventually after things really were working out, Miami wanted to go in another direction, I think. And I think Van Dyke probably wanted to go in another direction himself. So, you know, I think it was probably a mutual decision to kind of split things there. But it's a shame. He's a nice kid. I feel bad that things didn't quite work out in Miami. Just things kind of went off the rails a bit.
Yeah, I know you said you didn't get to talk to Ward today, so you may not really have a feel yet personally for this. But I'm curious, you know, you're talking about a guy here in Ward who started Incarnate Word, then he goes to Washington State, which is one of the more obscure schools in the country that you could play at a Power 5 for attention and media coverage and whatnot. Now here you are, you're the featured attraction, pro city, tons of attention going to be paid, good or bad, to whatever it is he does this year. Have you just in reporting on him, talking to people about him, been able to get a feel for, is he the right kind of kid to handle something like that?
I think so. It seems like, from what I've gathered, that he's got the right attitude. He's here. I mean, everyone knows that he's here for business. He entered the NFL draft and then withdrew. He wants to go to the NFL and didn't think that he was going to get drafted where he wanted to go, you know, round-wise in this year's draft. So he's here for business. I mean, he's here to play a year and go to the league. And I think everyone knows that. Everyone recognizes that. I think there's NIL involved, obviously. I'm sure, you know, I don't know the exact figure. You know, it's not public record or anything, but I'm sure he's making a pretty penny to play at Miami. There's no shortage of NIL money down here. And I think the system works out well for him. You know, he played in kind of an air raid style offense at Washington State. Shannon Dawson runs a similar style of offense. So there are wide receivers here already in Xavier Restrepo and Jacoby George. So guys he can throw to. The O-line is very solid. You know, returning three of the five guys from last year's offensive line did a very good job protecting Tyler Van Dyke. So I think it was kind of a perfect storm of good ingredients here. They really needed a quarterback, and he was the guy. So when he decided the NFL draft wasn't for him this year, I think Miami was, you know, kind of the blinking red option, like, this is the place to go.
Beyond just getting Ward used to everybody and mixed in with the offense, what else are the biggest things Miami needs to accomplish here in spring?
They got a good amount of guys they need to replace. Like I mentioned, three of the five linemen are back, but they got to get it. They got to fill the center spot and a guard spot most likely. They brought in some transfers, Zach Carpenter for center, and they got a few different options to fill that last spot. And they could kind of move the line around to figure out the best five guys on the field at any one time. They need a wide receiver to replace Colby Young, who transferred to Georgia. I think they're looking a lot at Isaiah Horton, who flashed in a few chances last year. There's also a couple of very talented freshmen who are enrolled early. JoJo Trader, who I've seen play a ton in high school, because he's a local kid. Excellent player. Nye Carr has gotten a lot of praise, I think. A very talented wide receiver in his own right. And then I think the biggest thing that I'm going to be keeping an eye on throughout spring is the secondary, because they have to replace two safeties, both of whom are in the draft. Their nickel cornerback and an outside cornerback. And they've got a lot of different options to fill those spots. A lot of young guys who were in their freshman year going into their second year. Brought in a couple of transfers, and Savion Riley from Vandy and Michelle Powell from Washington, who can kind of play nickel or safety or cornerback or wherever they need. So they've got a bunch of open spots in the secondary. That's what they need to work on. The depth there might not be quite where they want it. Like, there's no obvious number two or number three cornerback, number four cornerback. They've got two good, you know, solid starters in Daryl Porter, who had a great year last year, and Damari Brown, who's a very talented sophomore. But after that, you start to kind of wonder where that depth is and who's going to step up to fill those roles. So I think that's the biggest hole they got to fill, the biggest place they need to work on improving this spring.
Adam Lichtenstein's with us on the Chuck Oliver Show. He, again, covers the Miami Hurricanes for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. They got started today with spring practice. Adam, anybody just that you saw out there, you talked to, anybody that just kind of made you say, wow, okay, that's someone even in 2 or 3 months that maybe has made a step here?
Well, two guys that really stood out to me, we only get to watch part of practice, and the last part we got to watch were one-on-one receiver drills versus defensive backs and, you know, tight ends versus linebackers and stuff. And Miami last year, if you look at the numbers, they got almost no production from their tight ends in the passing game. Cam McCormick was their primary tight end, primarily a blocker. Elijah Arroyo, very talented player, but he was basically out with an injury all last year. He's back. But there were two other tight ends that really made me say wow today on some of their one-on-ones. Riley Williams, he's a sophomore. He's a very highly touted prospect last year, a four-star guy, and he makes an awesome one-handed catch over a walk-on in one-on-one drills. And then Elijah Lofton, another very talented guy, he made a one-on-one drill, again against a walk-on. He basically shoved the guy off the line and then just blew past him. And it was very impressive. The first time I've seen him play, it looked really good. So Miami's going to need a lot of production from their tight ends. And I think Cam Ward's going to be looking to get the ball to the tight ends a lot in like that kind of that medium space, the 10 to 19-yard range. And those are two guys who can make a big impact this year.
I'm curious what you think it does for them that they open in Gainesville as opposed to the last couple of years where, yeah, you had A&M on the schedule as an early game, but you had Bethune-Cookman 2 years ago, last year Miami of Ohio. Yeah, teams that you know, just on raw talent, you're going to beat unless you really screw around. What does it do for them to not only have a high-profile opponent, but a road game against a high-profile opponent in just mentally bringing your best in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I know one player, Wesley Bassain, the linebacker, got asked about that, and he kind of gave the usual, well, it's March, we're just thinking about us, we're not worried about that yet, which I'm sure is true, but, you know, it's hard not to get your juices flowing when, you know, Hurricanes versus Gators in Gainesville, in the swamp, 90,000 people, like, right now that might really not be on their mind, but I'm sure, you know, the cliche, like, you know, X days until Gainesville or whatever, that's up somewhere in the locker room or in the weight room or something. I'm sure that's around there somewhere because it is exciting. It is fun. It's, you know, a great environment for college football. I'm sure it's going to get everyone excited. And I'm sure as we get closer to the season, it's going to become a bigger and bigger factor. Right now, I think they're just focused on the spring. I think that, and I don't think they're lying when they say that. But, you know, that's a target date. You know, August 31st, I'm sure they've all got it circled.
Yeah, I mean, look, the fans will let them know if they don't know how big a deal that game is to the fans. They obviously haven't played on a yearly basis in forever, but when they do get together, it's no secret that those are two fan bases that are not crazy about each other. Last thing for you, Adam, I'm just curious. Last year, Mario Cristobal, famously, of course, in the Georgia Tech game, the biggest example of it, but this perception that Cristobal, while he has strengths, obviously, as a head coach, the in-game stuff is where he is vulnerable. Has he done anything? Is there anything that the staff is doing to try and correct some of those issues that have surfaced in the past?
He hasn't mentioned anything, at least not in an interview with the local media or anything like that. But I feel like, you know, after you make the mistakes that he did last year, you know, not taking a knee and stuff, it's kind of thing where you really hope you don't do it a second time. You really don't want to do it again. So you would hope that they've maybe made some changes to try to, you know, just make sure somebody's always got their eye on the clock and, you know, doing who has the sheets that you need, you know, if this happens, do this, you know. Just someone there to remind him on the sidelines in case, you know, he's focused on something else. He hasn't mentioned anything, and that's something maybe that'll come up later in the spring or, you know, closer to the season. That's something that obviously people want to know. I mean, it's been months now, and I was at an event like 2 weeks ago or a week ago, and somebody asked me, I told him what I did. He goes, why didn't Cristobal take a knee? And I was like, don't know. Still don't know. Still really don't know. And I was as shocked as everyone else. So, yeah, it's definitely something I would imagine that they've worked on and talked about.
Adam Lichtenstein, again, you can see his work on the South Florida Sun Sentinel's webpage, or if you're in South Florida, print copy of that. See him on Twitter. AB Lichtenstein is the handle there. Adam, appreciate you making some time for us here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Thanks for having me.
There you go. There's the check-in on Miami. Again, just got started today with the spring practice, and so see what they can do. Cristobal is just one of those guys that you see the strengths, recruiting, motivation. He obviously has positives, but you just cannot say with confidence watching him, watching the body of work, whether it's there, whether it's at Oregon, you cannot say with confidence this guy is going to steer the boat correctly for 13, 14 games. It's just really hard to do. Whether it's just not having his team ready and getting blasted in a game that you would never expect that they would lose, like a Middle Tennessee State, whether it's not handling a late game clock situation correctly, he has got to grow as a coach. And if it's something that you know, hey, this isn't my strength, then you have to figure out, okay, how do I address it somewhere else? So if that's empowering somebody in the box to be your clock wizard and just obsess over every minute detail of how you handle late game situations, or whether it be something else, whatever the story, Miami, if they're ever going to get back to being that elite national level program, as opposed to the perpetual tease of, if they could just get that South Florida talent to all stay home, look out for the Canes. If they ever want to get back to being anything close to what they were at their best, he's going to have to maximize the coaching. And I don't know that there's much reason to believe he can. So we'll see. I mean, last year after they beat A&M, it was kind of like, hey, how you like me now? And then we saw what A&M was, and it just still wasn't all that impressive. So real interested to see. That contract is long enough. He's got security, but how many of those kind of games? The Georgia Tech game was the most obvious, but how many of those games where you say this team was not served well by their coaching on game day, how many of those can you stack up before it becomes a problem? Going to be interesting to keep an eye on. Coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show, got What Matters to Me and a little bit of a sad note from the media world that we want to talk about straight ahead. Keep it right here.
Football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
He's got to go earn it every day. And we're not in a position where we can just say that it's given to somebody. He's got to, you know, we're changing our whole verbiage, our whole system back to what I'm comfortable with. And I need to see who has the best grasp on that.
That would be the voice of Hugh Freeze, head coach at Auburn. Of course, they are underway with spring football. Talking about Peyton Thorne, his quarterback, who he's the incumbent. But just because you're the incumbent doesn't mean that you for sure get to hold on to the gig. And yeah, you hear what Freeze says there about, you know, hey, we're doing what's comfortable for me. You really do wonder, did they build anything in year one at all other than just the familiarity of him with the players and with the SEC again? Did they get anything else built? Because it sure doesn't feel like it. I mean, it just feels like he's almost starting over with year two. You know, you had new coordinators on both sides, and obviously Freeze himself calling plays happened last year, but it does not feel like much got built there. And so we'll see whether or not Peyton Thorne does well enough in spring that after spring, Auburn's not in the market for a quarterback. There's a lot of people who are kind of surprised that Auburn didn't go in there and find somebody in the portal coming out of the season. And if they could have landed a guy like Cam Ward, for example, maybe they would have done exactly that. But whatever the story, certainly there is a belief that they're going to be willing to look around unless Hugh Freeze sees what he wants to see from Peyton Thorne or for somebody else. All right, so I want to tell you that it is time for What Matters to Me. That's brought to you by ThisStuffMatters.net today. And I want to just quickly pay tribute to Chris Mortensen, who was not a college football guy in his last few years of his career. But I want to talk about Chris Mortensen for a second because a lot of you probably do not remember how active he was on a story that was a really big deal for college athletics. And that's why I want to talk about him in this spot today. Again, Mortensen, longtime NFL insider for ESPN, and he passed at the age of 72, was fortunate enough to get a chance to talk to him as recently as just in the last month as a part of programming on 680 The Fan in Atlanta, where we're based out of. He was a regular part of 680 The Fan's programming for more than two decades, and so it was an honor to talk to Chris Mortensen, but a guy who loved what he did and was an ace reporter in a lot of different things. In fact, Dale Murphy of the Braves talked about how he was the beat reporter for them, 83 to 85, and how back then he was getting to know Mortensen. But after that Braves stint, Chris Mortensen wrote a book about what all he put together in his reporting. The book is called Playing for Keeps, How One Man Kept the Mob from Sinking Its Hooks into Pro Football. Again, the book was published right at the start of 1991, so you might not be able to find a copy of it now on eBay or wherever. But if you could, I would tell you to read it because I read it when it came out. It's a really good book. It's about Norby Walters, Lloyd Bloom, and agents getting involved with college football players and trying to get their hooks into college football players for the pros one day. It's a long story. I can't do it justice here. But those guys were involved with some Iowa players and some other players doing some stuff that could have been really, really problematic. It's a good book. It's an interesting story if you don't remember this era from the late 80s and what those guys were involved with. Again, when it comes to agents and trying to corrupt players, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, we were talking about Reggie Bush and the Heisman Trophy earlier in the program and the idea that his family had gotten money and he maybe had gotten money from agents and OMG, you can't let him keep the Heisman Trophy. Again, this is exactly what was going on in the late 80s with these guys, and Mortensen was involved in a lot of the lead reporting on it. It's a good book. And so again, while Chris Mortensen was not a quote unquote college football guy for his broader career, this story had heavy college football elements in it. It's a good book. It's worth a read. Just want to pay tribute to Chris Mortensen because, again, just a fantastic career. But more than that, you look at what people are saying about him. It's not about his work. It's about the man and about the way he carried himself, the way he supported colleagues and people dealing with medical problems and other stuff, the way he would be the first person to send him a message and say, hey, you know, let me help. So just a stellar guy all the way around. So I want to make sure we pay tribute to him today here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Again, that's this is What Matters to Me Today, brought to you by ThisStuffMatters.net. All right, so just a couple of minutes left. We had told you last week about Barry Odom, the UNLV head coach, and how he was going to do something that a little different than what you do when you're the Missouri head coach. He was going to ride a bull. That is not something that you do typically just for kicks. You do it because you're trying to raise money and visibility for your program. And credit to Barry Odom for being willing to do it. I saw him talk about it going into it. He got some national exposure with Marty and McGee on ESPN, among other things. And he said, you know, hey, this isn't necessarily something I'm dying to do, but yeah, you got to take one for the team. So Barry Odom got on a bull. The bull's name was Widowmaker. So it wasn't like they found one for him. You know, maybe Petunia would be a nice name for a bull. No. Widowmaker got on the bull, lasted 3.1 seconds. Basically, $1, and then after that, the bull slammed him right up the side of the head. And that was pretty much it for Barry Odom. It appears he is not the worst for wear for having done it. But yeah, he definitely, I don't think, is going to be in a big hurry to sign up to do that again. But credit to Coach Odom for being a good sport and putting himself on the line there on Widowmaker in Vegas for everybody's entertainment there on Saturday night. I don't know how much money that's going to make for his program, but hopefully it's a good bit. He earned it. If you watch the video, I'm on Twitter at Heath Radio. I tweeted it out. If you want to get a look at exactly how quick that 3.1 seconds went, you can check it out for yourself there if you want to. Big thanks to you for listening. By the way, speaking of Twitter, Chuck Oliver Show, our handle, if you want to follow us there as well. Thanks to David Holloway for producing this program. Hopefully Chuck will be back in the saddle, not on Widowmaker, but just back in the saddle tomorrow. We'll see you then here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com and then call us for a free in-home consultation.